Good morning and greetings in Jesus' name this morning. Glad to have been here and enjoyed the service so far, the devotions and the Sunday school lesson. Very happy to have been here. I do not have a Thanksgiving message this morning. After I began to look at search for some inspiration of what to share, I remembered Brother Bauman, Titus, is that his name? Your dad's name, Seth? Yeah. Titus preached on the on being grateful, and then Brother Nelson also shared his topic on Thanksgiving, and too many of my thoughts were in those tracks, and I didn't want to be guilty of plagiarism, copying other people's ideas. So I began to think of what else maybe we could share. And I don't know why, but my mind went to Luke chapter 15, the story of the prodigal. So if you would turn there, Luke chapter 15, and we're going to read verses 11 through 32. It's a very familiar story. I'm not sure what took my mind there. But anyway, so be it. I'd like to read these verses at this time. Luke 15, verse 11. And he said, this is Jesus, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of the goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servant, Bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. And yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. The title of my message this morning is The Failure, the Faultless, and the Father. The failure, obviously, is the first son. The story is really about two sons and about a father. We focus on the young son, the man that had the most obvious problems, but there are problems that were in the faultless son's life as well, and we're going to get to those. Let's talk about what the problems the younger son had. What was his deal anyway? The first thing that you will notice in this man, and I don't know how old he was, but he was old enough to know better. He was old enough to run away from home and live, and apparently wasn't exploited except of his own choice. And so that leads me to believe that he was old enough to know what he was up to. His first problem that you will notice is in verses 12 and 13. He apparently knew that his father had some goods to divide to these two boys. My understanding of these customs is this usually happened after the parents died, and if the father decided to do it before he died, that was his choice. It was very unwise, or it was disrespectful for this young man to come to the dad and say, "I want you to divide your goods now. This is what I'm asking." It seems really strange for that to happen. If the father would have chosen to do that, it would have been totally different. But he had a problem with wanting to gratify himself. I see rebellion here. I see that he was also not able to delay his gratification. He wanted something, and he needed his dad's money to do it. And so he said, "Well, this is the scheme, and I'm going to ask Dad to give me my money so that I can do what I want to do." So we see there that he is he wanted to gratify himself, and the attitude that he had is that I will have what I want when I want it, and I will deal with the consequences. And he probably wasn't even thinking about the consequences at that time. You will also notice that he had a great disregard for his parents. We talked a little bit about that with the way he approached his father. But we will also notice that he had no regard for what his father did to gain that living by going into the far country and wasting it. To him, it was nothing. I want it for me. I'm going to consume it on my own desires. I'm going to go and get away from Dad so that there's no more control, and I'm going to do whatever I want to. He had no respect for what that money had cost his father in work or whatever it was. What happened to this young man, the circumstances, the consequences that came later? You will see these. It didn't take long. He spent everything he had in verse 14. And as fate would have it, we might say, there was also a famine. Maybe the famine was in his pocketbook, I don't know. But he was definitely in bad shape. He had spent everything he had, and whether it was an actual famine where there was no food to be bought, or food was very expensive, or was it a famine that just came because he wasted his money? I'm not sure what to make of all that. But anyway, either way, the consequences that he found himself in was that there was nothing to feed himself with. And he ended up broke, and he ended up, it sounds like he was working for less than food. That's what it sounds like. He says here that he wanted to eat what the pigs were eating, but no man would even let him have that. No man gave unto him. I don't know if he actually ate the pigs' food or not. Some of that stuff is a little ambiguous, but it seems as though he was working just for a place to live and maybe some pigs' food. Obviously, he had no friends. Nobody was there to give him that brotherly love that we talked about in Sunday school. There was no friends. He was very alone, slave to a man that wouldn't even give him food. Okay, we're just going through this, looking at what happened to this young man. Verses 17 and 18, he begins to think. And he thinks back to the days that he was under his father's rule as a son. And he began to contemplate that even his father's servants had it really good. And he was ready to go back and be a servant. He knew that his father was a good father, and he also knew that his father was a good master. And so he purposed to go home and become a servant under his kind father after this hard, hard thing that he had gone through. So he chose to do that. He got up, verse 21, and he went back and said exactly what he was going to say. And at the end of the story, as we get to the end of this story, we find that the younger son, the failure, the young man that probably we would have prayed for in prayer meetings, and we should have prayed for them in prayer meetings. But I think we all know these kind of people. These kind of people that blow everything. They have all the opportunities in front of them, and they turn out to be a failure. They choose to do something that is wrong. Well, anyway, I want us to notice that at the end of this story, that this young man returned, and he is inside the house feasting under the father's benevolence. What are some things we can learn, some counsel that we can gain from this young man? The first thing that I see that we can learn from him is that selfish rebellion and gratifying our desires will lead us to ruin in some form or another. You know, we don't have to literally leave home to find this out. But I wonder how many people, how many of us sitting here this morning would have to raise our hands if we were to ask the question, have we tried this trick? Maybe we didn't literally take advantage of our dad, our physical father, but we've tried it. We've taken our own path. We've rebelled against what was expected of us. We were trying to gratify some desire, trying to cheat the law of sowing and reaping. And I want us to remember that the lesson we learned from this young man, and we don't need to learn it from this particular young man, but we can learn it from any number of young men or young ladies, and that is that the law, that no one is smart enough to outwit the law of sowing and reaping. It will get us. I don't know why we think we can fool it, but especially young people, and this isn't intended for young people, it's intended for all of us, but I want to plead with us as young people that we don't buy that lie, that we don't think that somehow I'm smart enough to outwit that law. It doesn't work. This young man, I guess he thought he could. Surely he knew other people that did something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's who he ran away with. The Bible doesn't tell us that. But eventually, the money is going to run out. The popularity is going to run out. We're going to become slaves to something. This man became a slave to a man that fed pigs that barely gave him enough to stay alive. But maybe a 2015 example of that, we will run into all kinds of problems. We'll run into people. We'll become slaves to some form of authority. If we can't bring ourselves under the authority of our father or of our church or of our husbands or whatever, somewhere along the line there's going to be an authority that we simply cannot buck. Maybe that's going to be God. Maybe God will let us run long enough that we think we've even outsmarted the FBI or whoever. But there's always going to be an authority that we don't buck, that we can't. Maybe we don't run that far. But the law of sowing and reaping will bring us into slavery of some kind. It might be debt. It might be bad health. It might be bad habits. It might be, I don't know, many, many things that could fit there. So that's lesson number one that we can learn, that there is a law that no one can cheat. No one is smart enough to outwit. I want you to notice that this young man, apparently, I'm gonna make a guess here. When he was living in verse 13, when he was wasting his substance with riotous living, he was living in a state of insanity that I'm going to call the state of denial. When we deny reality, it's actually a form of insanity. We're maybe not out there beating our heads against a brick wall, hoping that we get a different result every time we try it. But he kind of was. We just said you can't outsmart the law of sowing and reaping. So what was he doing if he wasn't butting against a brick wall? That's what he was doing. There is a, I'm going to call it insanity. There is an insanity in denying reality. I don't know what he was thinking as he spent his substance. I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us what people think. The Bible just tells us what the facts are. So we have to kind of take a guess at it. But we know human nature because we happen to be humans. And I'm suspecting that this young man just kept writing the checks, or however, whatever form of currency he had. And he figured, you know, someday someone's going to give me some money and it's all going to be all right. You know, I'll get that, you know, I'll win the lottery the next time. Or maybe he gambled and so, you know, I'll win the card game. And I know that I can keep living this way and I know that my money's getting all, but surely my lucky break will come. It's a denial. The reality was that he was spending money and he was wasting it on riotous living. And he was denying it in his mind. It wasn't until he was hungry enough to eat pig's food that he came to reality. It says he came to himself. And what is that if that's not reality? And each of us needs to get to that place where we come to reality with where we really are. And we need that all the time. This isn't just for prodigals. This isn't for people that run away from home. I think Christians need to take reality checks, even if we think we're living a sanctified life. Where am I going? What's going to keep happening if I continue the things that I'm doing? What is the end of my choices? Because the young man here was living in a state of denial that denied reality. Did he have warnings along the way? Did this young man have any friends at all that said, look, young man, I wish we knew his name, but we don't. Did any of them say, you know, you're kind of getting in trouble here? Did he get any warnings at all? I think he probably did. And so we need to learn from that God will, reality will catch up to us. And we need to thank God if we run into something that wakes us up, even if it's dire straits. The third lesson that I want to learn here from this man is that humbling ourselves and asking to be a servant after the way he had acted would be a very hard thing to do. Try to imagine being a son and you grew up around servants. Your dad was the boss and you were the son. You would have enjoyed certain privileges that the servants did not enjoy. You would have enjoyed a certain level of superiority over those servants, I expect. And then you make a total fool of yourself by running off and wasting all your dad's, the part of the inheritance that came to you. And now you realize that the only option that you have that's worth any consideration is going back home. I don't know. It takes a level of desperation. It also takes a trust in the Father, and it also takes, I guess humiliation would be the only word that I can give. And if his father would have only granted him a servant station, all those other servants that would have stayed there all that time would probably have felt superior to the son. What I see in this choice, in the fact that this young man chose to do that, is that he was done. He was broken. There was no more resistance to anything inside or outside, and he knew that whatever it took, he was going to do to get back into contact with his father, because that was the only place that he knew that he could, that he would find any hope. His friends didn't give it to him. His money got away. And his master that he was serving to this day was not giving him what he knew his father would. Now, the fourth thing I want you to learn, that I want us to learn, is that this man did what he purposed to do. How many days did he sit and think? The Bible seems like this all just took place within a couple of days. But I'm suspecting it took a little while for him to waste all of that money and for him to come to himself. Did he spend a day or two thinking about going back to his home? Or did he just jump up and go right away? I don't know. But either way, he went back. And the point that we're learning here is that good intentions, good ideas, good advice, and good books will never bring us to a relationship with the Father until we arise and do it. And I think we all can relate to that. We all know what it's like to read things that inspire us. As we sit in our lazy boys, we read a really wonderful book about how somebody served the Lord. And that would be great to be that type of person. But we can't get there until we get off the lazy boy. And this young man couldn't get back into a relationship with his father until he went back there. And so good intentions are never enough. And this young man carried through. Well, I'm sure there's many more things we could learn from this young man, but I'd like to move now to what I call the faultless. This is the elder son. We don't have very much about him. It seems like the story is about the prodigal or the returned, the one who sinned against his father, the one who ran away, the one who wasted the money. It seems like the story is about him. But I believe the story is also about this older boy, and it's also about the father. And we're going to get to the father here in just a little bit. But let's look at the older boy, the older son. When he heard, verse 25, just think about him. He's out working, doing what the younger son should have been helping with. Can you really blame him? Put yourself there. I don't know how many of you have relatives who you would consider failures, but we probably all know someone who has done something like this younger son. But you've stayed. You've slaved. You've saved the money. You've taken good care of all of the things that has been entrusted to you. Maybe you had part interest in that calf. I'm just trying to imagine what was going through his mind. So he comes to the house, he's working all day, and he finds out that there's a party in the house, and he didn't know anything about the party. What is going on? Well, he wasn't the type of person to be taken by surprise. He was a steady person. He was one that you could count on. And I get the feeling that his personality was the kind that he didn't like surprises, good or bad. And he wasn't fixing to walk into that house till he knew what was going on. And so he called one of the servants. The interesting thing that I think I see in the older son is that he had actually grown to hate his own sense of obligation, his own obedience. He had grown to hate it. And yet he knew that's what he should do. I'm suggesting to us this morning that if we find ourselves as an older son, that we feel that we have done well, and we are faithful in our father's house, that we never have the right or the privilege to turn that around and hate the goodness of God for reaching out to failures. Because the Father in this story really is Jesus. We know that. But and it certainly does not give us the right or the privilege to hate the failure. We just can't do that. The third thing that we need to learn from this son is that he failed to realize that a proud, self-righteous attitude would be just as effective as rebellion at keeping him out of fellowship with the Father. The younger son rebelled. We know that. He ran away, took his money, was a horrible person. But the day he said, I am done and I'm going to go back, was critical in coming back into relationship with his father. The older son knew that there was no relationship with the father in the younger son. He knew that because there was distance between them. He knew that because the younger son had done wrong. He knew that because the younger son wasted his father's hard-earned money. The elder son didn't seem to realize that his anger toward the younger brother and his anger toward his father was just as effective at keeping him outside, even though the distance was only this much. How far would it have been for him to walk into the house? The young man went to a far country. That was a big distance. But the elder son could have walked just a little bit. But he didn't see that that attitude would be just as effective as at keeping him out. It seems to me that there are many temptations that go with the elder son that we too often don't consider. There's many more things that we could probably pull from him, but we're going to move now to the father. We've looked at the failure, the son that obviously blew it, but found himself back in fellowship with the father. We've looked now at the faultless son, the one who did everything right, but at the end of the day, he was still outside. Now let's see what we can learn from the father. Now, I've been referring to this as a father because the story refers to it, but I really believe that what Jesus was trying to do with this story is show people how he relates to people. And so I'm going to, from now on, refer to the father, looking at him. I may still call him the father because that's what our story says, but we're going to look at him more as Jesus Christ and how he relates to people and on both sides of this fence. The first thing that you will notice about the father in this story is that he loves willingly and he forces no love or commitment of either son. He gave the money or the goods, whatever it was. I'm calling it money, but whatever it was, the physical, the material goods, he gave them to the younger son at his demand. Does that mean that Jesus is going to give us whatever we want? No, but it does mean that Jesus will never force us to have a relationship with him. If you want to leave, you may leave. That's fine. It's not fine, but Jesus won't force it. The father here did not force. He did not use any badgering, no coercion. There was no conversation recorded between the father and the younger son. He said, okay, have it your way. Is that love or is that love? It's love in the sense that it allows a person to enter a relationship willingly. The father, Jesus, has no interest in forced commitment. We notice that he is in a position of authority. He has control over his own goods. The younger son had no access to those goods until he demanded them, and then he gave them willingly. And Jesus is the same way, that he wants us to come to him of our own desire to be with him. The second thing that we see here is that kind of related to this, but the Father in the story, Jesus Christ, is gracious, merciful, just, and unchanging. Four things. He's gracious, merciful, just, and unchanging. And why I say that is because of the way both sons spoke to and about their father. Notice what the younger son thinks. He says, you know what? There are hired servants in my father's house that have it better than I do. And I'm going to go back and tell him I want to be a servant. proves to me that he knew a couple of things. He knew that his father was still a good master. His father hadn't gone bad. He knew that his father was going to be merciful in bringing him back. He also expected some justice of his father. He expected to receive some punishment, something, for the things that he had done wrong. It also shows me that he expects grace to be there in overlooking and receiving, not necessarily overlooking, but in receiving him and forgiving him. The elder son recognized it as well. He says, look what you've done. You've taken this younger son back and gave him all these things. He was actually, in essence, seeing the same qualities that the younger son knew existed. The elder son was recognizing them in his angry retort to his father. The third thing that we see here is that the father was looking for his son. I think it's key that the father looked for the son where the father stayed. And what I want us to learn from that is that if we have walked away in our relationship with Jesus Christ, if we have walked away, we can't expect Jesus to come chasing us necessarily. Remember, he wants no coercion. He will draw us, that's true. But the younger son had to abandon where he was to go back to where he left. I think we need to remember that. If we've walked away, we can't necessarily pick up where we left off. The Father isn't going to come chasing us. We have to go to Him. And yet, the Father will always be looking. He never forgot His Son. He never says that he saw him a long way off. And that's when the father began to run. I want you to just notice that. But there was still some things that the son had to do. But we see great compassion. We see tenderness. We see a glimpse here of Jesus Christ taking this. What do you think he looked like by now? I think we all know what people look like when they waste their substance on riotous living. And we know what they look like when they've been down and out. Are you going to hug that person? Are you going to give them a kiss? Jesus does. But here we see a heart of Jesus. He takes him back to the status of a son, kills a valuable animal, a fatted calf. It wasn't even a little goat. That's what the older son mentions in verse 29. He's like, you didn't even give me a kid. And here you are killing this steer. I want you to notice too in verse 28 that the father was also looking for the older son. The father was not satisfied that the party was complete, and therefore he went looking for the older son. I want you to just think about that. And he was there drawing him as well. Another thing that we see about the father is that he wished that his attitude toward the younger son was demonstrated in his older son. Probably this morning, if we were honest with ourselves before God, there are probably more elder sons here this morning than there are younger sons. Probably. And therefore, the temptations of the elder son are probably more real to us. And that I believe that's one reason that Jesus gave us this story is so that we, as elder sons, will learn to demonstrate his attitude toward the younger sons. think I'll just leave it at that. The last thing, we talked about this before, but I want to just talk about this again. The last thing that I have here from the Father is, again, that there was no force on either son. The Father did not force the younger son to stay. He did not force the elder son to come in. The younger son ran away and came back of his own volition. It was his decision. The older son stayed and refused to come into the party of his own will. What the Father wanted in both of his sons was a humbling of themselves, both of them to see themselves as privileged to pull up to the table of the feast. Both sons needed to see that they were both recipients of the Father's blessings. And that is probably where the biggest test comes for all of us. So maybe this is a Thanksgiving message after all. That we see ourselves as recipients of the blessing of the Father. And this largely, I'm focusing on spiritual blessings because, like our Sunday school lesson said, that we put away covetousness because, and the word for, I believe, could be translated, because he hath said, I will never leave thee or forsake thee. In conclusion, just some questions. Which son am I? Am I the failure? Or am I the faultless son? And I want us to think of it in terms of the end of the story. I'm not asking this morning when I say, am I the failure, am I a rebel? I'm not really asking that. I'm asking, are we in relationship with Jesus Christ? Have we learned the blessing of brokenness to gain that relationship? Or do I still think I deserve the fatted calf? Which son am I? Am I inside enjoying the blessing of the Father? Or am I too proud or angry because God is too good? That's in essence what the older son said. And you know, the attitude that I have really makes all the difference in the way the story will end in my life. Whether I'm a younger son or an elder son. Let's kneel for prayer.